Good morning, everyone. Since we're broadcasting and recording, let me go ahead and make some preliminaries for the record. This is a public hearing concerning objections to conditions imposed on the recertification of HART voting systems. This is the third in a series of four public hearings concerning the conditions for use for the four vendors in Colorado. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, conducting the hearing on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Kaufman, who is not feeling well, but I'm hoping he is hopefully listening to the broadcast. To my immediate left is Stephanie Sigelski, legal specialist in the Elections Division, and to my immediate right is John Gardner, who is the Program Manager for the Voting System Certification Program, and to his right is Tim Bishop, also with the testing board that works with John. The date is March 7th, 2008. The time is 8:07 a.m. We are meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. I would like to take about 30 seconds just for the record as far as stating the scope of the hearing and so forth. Each of the recertifications came with conditions that were imposed. We had, right after the December 17th decisions, we met with, spent 4 hours with each vendor and interested county clerks, and went over the overview binders, which is where the conditions are stated. And of course, the overview binders are published on our website as well. And we've indicated from the beginning that there were various ways to make known objections to those conditions, one being if they amount to a decertification, to make those objections through formal request for reconsideration, which various counties did file. We've also noted that the election code allows for informal objections as well. And then with the passage of House Bill 1155, that provides us a third mechanism to address the conditions as well. And the purpose of today's hearing really is out of 1155 to try to resolve as many issues about the conditions as we can, hopefully within the 30 days that House Bill 1155 calls for. It does say that that county clerks need to know within 30 days of the effective date of that bill, basically what the situation is with their voting systems, and that is March 12th. That's the 30th day. So the Secretary's intention is to try to resolve, if possible, all of the issues with respect to conditions by March 12th. But we have said, and I want to reaffirm, that whatever is decided by March 12th is not necessarily the end of the discussion. I think as we get more information, we can always still talk about the conditions under the informal process. A couple of things that have come up that I just want to clarify is that the conditions do not apply to grandfathered equipment. I know that's come up sometimes. That's equipment that was purchased or acquired prior to May 28th, 2004. The other thing I wanted to mention, that the testing board has been working, and I don't know whether about this particular vendor, but in general, the testing board has continued to work since December 17th on issues that have come out, even in the meetings that we had in December. So in some cases, we may, where it's appropriate, I think maybe John might want to speak up if there's additional information about a particular condition that we're discussing or whatever. Mostly I want to proceed as however the counties want to proceed. As we talk about specific objections, it may be helpful for John Gardner or Tim Bishop, if they have information that might be helpful, or if they already know that there's another way to address a condition, then I want to hear from them as well, so that we can, what we found so far, sometimes there really is agreement on some of these things pretty quick. So with that, I guess I'd like to turn it over to the counties, starting with the counties, and I think Hillary Hall, you're going to go first, I believe, if you'll come to the podium, identify who you are, and begin.
Good morning. My name is Hillary Hall. I'm the Boulder County Clerk and Recorder. First, we want to thank you again for the opportunity to continue to refine our elections processes. As we see this as, you know, testing took this much of the picture, and now we're welcoming the opportunity to bring in what existing processes that we already have, as well as post-election processes and administrative processes. Today we're going to address what we feel are the more major concerns and conditions, and then the rest of them we'll be responding to in written form. So with that, I'm going to ask my colleague Jack to come up and give you an overview of today.
Good morning, Jack Arrowsmith, Clerk and Recorder for Douglas County. First, I would like to thank many of our clerks who have traveled many miles to be here today. Thank you so much. We've been working with the 47 counties to resolve some of these problems, but each of the county clerks have made sacrifices and time and effort to be here. I want to describe my own personal sacrifice. Today's my wife's birthday. Happy birthday, honey. Okay, we're going to start with an overview, and one of the points that we want to talk about is that every business has trusted relationships with their vendor partners to different degrees. And so maybe just as an example of this, we took a look at the military, and as short as last month, the military had a meeting to discuss what that relationship looked like. Their vendor partners have secrets, military secrets, that are safeguarded and important to this country, and they've developed that partner relationship with their vendors. At that meeting, the statement was made the correct way for the U.S. Department of Defense and prime contractors to use commercial technologies is to fund partner vendors to achieve necessary capabilities. And so we think that the election industry is not anything different. We see that the Secretary of State has a trusted partner with Sabre as you're developing the statewide voter registration database. And so this relationship is not unusual, and I think the problem comes, how do we get to the point where our vendors become trusted partners in the relationship? We also want to talk about the fact that, as we have stressed over and over, county budgets have already been set for 2008. They're usually set the previous year. Our county commissioners like to etch those things in stone. So it's very difficult for us at this point to come up with any kind of additional funding because that budget has already been established. Whatever we come up with in terms of our conditions and solutions, we believe they need to be fiscally responsible and make some sense. And as we continue to say, our current practices have to prove to be reliable. Oftentimes what we're doing here under that heading is trying to, we have requirements to solve problems that have not currently appeared. And so we need to be careful about that. I have currently said and have been on record that for Douglas County, April 1 is kind of that line in the sand, that we need to have a very clear direction in terms of the 08 election by April 1. Now, I can say that my colleagues have grabbed me about the lapels and slapped me about saying April 1 is way too late. But again, time is of the essence. Any additional charges thrust on clerks, any new process, any additional things that the clerks are going to need to do, we believe adds risk to the 08 election. And this is, as we've emphasized over and over, this is going to be the largest election that Colorado has ever seen. So the vision, and I assume the vision of the Secretary of State as well as the clerks, is to try to transform this process as quickly and as efficiently as possible so we can have a successful 08 election. So let's start with the first aspect, and this is template restrictions. First of all, we're not sure that the rules or statutes require template certification, but the problem with it is that it, with this restriction in place, it certainly prohibits the effective use of our DREs. We are currently, with the conditions, allowed to use them for a recall election or a primary, but not a general election, and that is certainly hugely problematic. It certainly complicates the use of paper ballots. It does add cost and what I think to be unnecessary risk. And template certification, the certification process itself, jeopardizes the timeline. We don't really know what the ballot looks like until right prior to the election itself. People are sending us language and so forth, and so some of these decisions about the template are very last minute. It doesn't provide for a long process to certify the template itself. We don't know whether this year's ballot will be one or two pages. We're all praying and lighting candles that it will be one page, but we don't know. It's gonna hit us at the last minute, and we'll have to make that decision. What are some possible resolutions to this problem? Colorado develops a process to trust vendor relationships. We, over time, have developed this trust process with our vendors. Many clerks have been through very difficult elections, and that partnership is developed over time with our vendors, so we think that those relationships are already in place. HART provides new or modified templates to counties, and this is a process that we're all familiar with. We have come to expect on our vendor to do this. The process is set up, and we understand how it works. Counties begin immediate use, as I said, of those templates. It's not as if there's a long period of time between getting the templates and needing to use them in the election process. One of the things we're talking about is that counties could place the templates in escrow, and I want to talk a little bit about that process as we move forward. This whole escrow process might be a solution to the problem, and we'll talk further about that as we move forward. I'd like to move on to both Connie and Garland, and they're going to talk to us about software in the county's possession.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for inviting us, and we're pleased to be able to get here from out on the plains. It was snowing hard this morning, so just glad we made it. My name is Connie Engmeyer. I'm Morgan County,
and this is Garland Wall, Washington County Clerk and Recorder.
And what we have, the portion we're considering, is the counties must have software in their possession. We calculated out that in order to outfit our 38 counties that don't have BOSS, it's going to cost us $1.9 million. Well, frankly, this is not economically feasible for many of the small or medium-sized counties. Many of these counties, of course, are very little, and they have very little revenue source coming in. Budgets have been cut from 3 to 6%, I'm sorry, in many of our little rural communities. Many of the water wells have been shut off by the state, leading to severe drop in revenues in our counties. So in several of our counties, the lack of water is threatening the livelihood of the citizens, and the downturn of economy has been taking its toll on all rural Colorado. The necessity for purchasing an election system over being able to barely provide the citizens with basic services is not responsible government. And I know all of our county commissioners have very big concerns about this issue, so hence this is one of the reasons why our thrust has been financial. The next slide is $266,000 yearly ongoing costs for the software BOSS maintenance. The annual maintenance charges will also add more cost burdens to our counties. Right now, HART is at $7,000 just for the BOSS portion of the maintenance, license and maintenance. And with everything has been going up, and these costs have been going up by 4%. Again, that's another one of those things that we're just having a difficult time getting our hands around is how are all the little rural counties going to be able to fund this. Our other concern are soft costs to the counties. This was big when we've been out visiting with many of our other constituents. Of course, we've had many, many phone calls to all of our counties, and they've been calling us and visiting about what plights they are going to have if they have to purchase such a system. One other thing, of course, is is storage space for this new equipment. I know Bev here, she's traveled down from Yuma with us, and they frankly don't have any other place to put this equipment, let alone how are we going to provide security cameras for these things, plus all the other security issues that go along with it. I mean, it's not just a little thing that we're trying to implement here, and it's one of those things when the counties do it, they want to do it right, but we also feel like we need a little bit more time to work on some of these aspects of this. Another issue is the small counties don't have IT in-house. Many of them have to hire outside in order to get IT help. I know one of our other fellow employee clerks called and said it's going to cost her between $5,000 to $10,000 because they don't even have any IT that are within their own county, so they're going to have to hire them and bring them in. So that was, of course, another big concern for their county. And then unfunded mandates. Well, and like Jack brought up to begin with, no current funding is available. You know, it just wasn't part of our scenario this year. We were really hoping we wouldn't get to this spot. So, but now we are, and we really have diligently have been looking for other funding sources. We've gone out to our Department of Local Affairs. We've checked with DOLA. I mean, we have been working diligently trying to find funds for this, but you know, nobody wants to drop this in the middle of their funding season, so they're in the same plight that we are all in. So anyway, one of the other counties, like I said, we've been talking back and forth a lot, you can imagine, but some of the clerks have been reducing their work days because the commissioners have cut their funds. And then a few of the counties just have 1.5 people in their staff, and that's the whole office. That's all they have. So that's my portion. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My portion is not enough time to change business processes in 2008. And some of what I'm going to say has already been said, but it is important enough that we feel it needs to be said over and over and over. 2008 is a very important year. We don't feel that the time to implement these changes is in a presidential year, and time is short to get everything done that we would have to do for this. We're still implementing the new score system. This would be added on to that. We also would have to start with a process of developing IGAs with other counties. Commissioners, attorneys, and that all takes time. The next PowerPoint is many counties do not have the personnel to use BOSS, and personnel in the smaller offices is not just about elections. We also handle recording, motor vehicle, driver's licenses, liquor licenses, marriage licenses, clerk to the Board of County Commissioners, payroll, accounts receivable and payable, and registrar of property titles, which is work similar to what your abstractors and title companies do. We don't feel there's any benefit in the terms of election management. We feel election management should be left to election professionals who are fully aware of the impacts and uniqueness of their counties. Smaller counties don't have IT people to run BOSS, and it really complicates our process. One of the resolutions, Colorado develops a process to trust our vendor relationships. We rely on vendors for many aspects of our jobs, as does most government and private businesses. You wouldn't get your motor vehicle titled or registered, or you wouldn't get a driver's license if we weren't already trusting our vendors that that have those software pieces in our office. Our vendors have nothing to gain by sending us bogus software. HART provides proof of BOSS trusted build. HART can make arrangements to provide the SOS with the trusted build. And if you have further questions about that, I'm going to have you refer them to Travis, who is here with HART. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I think what we're saying, in essence, that it encompasses a large group of things, but we're talking about transporting of passwords, templates, building the actual ballot. All of these kinds of things we, in the past, have trusted our vendor to do. So we're trying to develop a process that encompasses the whole idea, trust but verify. And I think that's the process that we're looking at, rather than saying we don't have a trusted vendor. So we've talked about maybe some out-of-the-box possibilities in terms of this trust but verify model. One of the solutions we're talking about is having the vendor send us the templates, the ballots, the passwords, but to be able to escrow that somewhere so that if it's ever in question anything happened, we could go back to the pristine software and verify that there was nothing in the software that would have corrupted the election process. So out of the box, I came up with the idea that perhaps the statewide internet portal authority could act as that third party individual. And what I'd like to do at this point is bring up three individuals who are the gurus for the portal. I'd like to introduce Greg Rippey. Greg is the executive director of the Statewide Internet Portal Authority. I'd like to introduce Dan Morrison. Dan Morrison is the general manager for Colorado Interactive, the vendor that actually makes the portal work. And I'd like to introduce Mark Church. Mark is the real guru, the director of development. Greg, did you want to start?
Welcome.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. I don't think I've ever been called a guru before, so it's a pretty exciting day for me. This just came up in the last couple days when Jack approached us. Jack happens to serve on our board of the authority. And what I'd like to quickly do for you is tell you who the authority is and a little bit about our governance model on that, so you can have a better idea of who we are if we were to serve as a third-party database intermediary. I am Greg Rippey. I am the executive director of the Statewide Internet Portal Authority. The authority is a enabled authority by state statute. It was 04-244 is the enabling legislation that created the authority. We are governed by a 13-member governing board. We have Mr. Hobbs representing the Secretary of State's office, Jack Arrowsmith from local government. In addition, we have four governor appointees of major agencies consisting of the Public Information Officer, the Department of Revenue, executive directors. These are executive directors. The Executive Director of Labor and the Executive Director of
Regulatory Agencies.
Didn't I say Dora? Dora, Labor, Revenue, and the Information Officer for the Governor. In addition, we also have the State CIO serves on our board, a member from Judiciary who is appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, one senator, one representative, and in addition, those three private sector members. That makes up our governing board. We are a very independent, to the extent that we have a vendor, who I'll introduce our vendor relationship there, which is Colorado Interactive, but we have all the unique quasi-governmental authorities that an authority in the state of Colorado enjoys. We've been asked if it's possible for us to act as this intermediary, and we're here to discuss that a little bit today, if that is something that you would be desirous of engaging with us to perform that function for you. With that, if there's any questions about the makeup of the authority and how it operates, I'd answer those. But I think it's more important that we talk to our vendor and how they might be able to meet what we're being asked to do. But please keep in mind that as we've only been asked this in the last couple days, we certainly don't know all the requirements that may exist, but we're willing to talk about those. And so I'd like to bring Dan up as the general manager of Colorado Interactive. Colorado Interactive was selected by the authority as our partner and vendor for providing for us web application services. Their servers are co-located with the state servers at 690 Kipling, and so we have that relationship. It was an RFP process that we went through to select NIC USA, and then Colorado Interactive is a wholly owned subsidiary of NIC USA, which is in Overland, Kansas, or somewhere near there.
Seems right. Okay. Olathe
these days. Olathe or Overland, and I don't know where the line. I guess that's like the difference between Centennial and something else. Yeah. So.
Thanks, Greg, and thanks to everyone for having us today. Greg mentioned that we're a wholly owned subsidiary of a company called NIC. Our specialty at NIC is the management and operation of state internet portals. We have 21 states, and Colorado is one of those 21. So if you look at the constellation of states and those states that have a significant bit of their government business on the internet, our company NIC is by far and away the largest player in that space. The largest next vendor has one state. There's maybe two of those, and we're after them. There's us with 21. Probably the most critical requirement for operating a state internet portal, that being providing on the web the ability for the public and for businesses to send and receive data to those state databases, is the key skill set that we have to have. We're experts at that. We're experts at working with state government to develop solutions that interact with those state databases securely. This is why it was imperative to us, and we actually recommended, and we're grateful that the state agreed to allow us to co-locate all of our equipment in the state data center. That means that we share the same secure environment that all state agencies share, and we are subject to the same security requirements as the state data servers are. Our stock in trade, again, is the sending and receiving of data securely to the state and to local government entities. We also do some work with Jack Arrowsmith down in Douglas County, and are anticipating some work with other counties, too, to enable their services to be placed on the internet as well. We're very security conscious. In fact, to the extent that we have hired several third-party entities to independently audit our security environment in the state data center. We were pleased to have achieved a very rigorous process during the last 12 months, and we are now designated as a so-called cyber trust secured vendor, meaning that we've met this very rigorous external security requirement for our environment here in the state of Colorado. We're one of 9 portals in our company that achieved that on the first try, and we're expecting that the other states will follow suit this year. But so Jack came to us the other day, and he proposed that SIPA and the portal might be able to provide an intermediary service for the transmission of data files from HART to the counties. This is something in principle that we do every day anyway, in terms of providing a secure channel for the transmission of data from point A to point B being a government entity. I was fortunate enough to be the general manager before I came to Colorado a year ago of the state of Hawaii's internet portal. And in that job for 5 years, we also served as an intermediary for the transmission of data files from one government jurisdiction to another, from the state judiciary to the law enforcement community, for example. And so we're familiar with how to do this from a technical perspective. But I think one of the caveats I would offer, while we could technically do it, and I'm going to offer Mark Church's resources to answer any of your technical questions, because I'm not a guru either, and certainly not in the technology side of things. Mark probably fits that job description better than anybody in our team. So I think that while technically this is feasible, as I understand what the requirement would be, is it be a neutral conduit, providing security, a secure means of transmission of these files from the vendor to the county. I think it would be imperative for us to agree on your requirements for that trust factor that you're looking for here, so that we design this process up front so that it meets everybody's expectation going in, and that should there be a need downstream from here after the election or in the process of leading up to the election, should there be a need for us to provide you with the build file, that we understand what your audit procedures would be in that event, so we can build our process up front to meet the requirements that ultimately would be you would expect us to live by. So that said, I think I will open it up for questions.
Can I add?
Please.
I believe one of my roles as director is to protect the integrity and protect the Internet Portal Authority. As we've had this brief discussion, I am insistent upon the fact that we do not have access to the data. If we're to serve as intermediary, we will take the data, we will store it, we will pass it along as directed, but we are not going to have access to look at that data, to do anything to that data. We don't want the keys from Hart, we don't want the keys from the county. We are the safety deposit box, just as you would go down to the bank and say, I want to put this in there. They give you the key, you go in and do it yourself in a secure setting, and then the person that lets you in doesn't have the ability to go in there and go into your safety deposit box. I want to make it very clear that one of the risks that I see to the Portal Authority is that if something were to go awry, that we would be looked askance at and say, what did you do? We are going to formulate this in a way that, to minimize our risk to it, we would insist with the vendor and the county that there is a sign-off and an understanding that we do not have access to that data. That is not the role we want to play. That is not the role we will play.
Greg, could I ask a question?
Sure.
Maybe you're going to cover this too, but my understanding would be, I think, that if the Portal Authority were to take this on, then it would be handled by Colorado Interactive under their contract so that there would not be a cost. But that's my question is about the cost to counties, to the
sure,
state,
and,
whatever.
Sure, and let me...
You're going to start to that.
Well, I'll start and then you can follow. We do have a self-funded model, and that's one of the real beauties of this authority. We do not use taxpayer dollars. We have a revenue stream that we share with our vendor, and there are a number of applications that we put up on a monthly basis that are no fee to cities, counties, and state agencies. It's hard, and we also have things that do have fees associated with them, and we've had bills that have fees associated with them, such as Department of Revenue activities that are outside what we consider the self-funded model. It is hard to give a definitive answer to that, not knowing necessarily what the requirements may be. Is it possible that it fits within that self-funded model? I believe so, but I hate to give a just a quick answer saying, we can do this at no cost, not knowing what we're signing up for in its entirety. And I'm sorry that that's kind of a...
No, that's understandable. So, thanks.
You may have some other questions. First of all, I want to thank these folks for coming today. When I first proposed this possible solution, we had to get through many, many no's to get to a maybe. and so that's where we're at right now. We're at that maybe process. We talked, Dan and I talked yesterday about what did this mean in terms of folks at the portal, how many people are involved in this process and so forth. And, you know, we can probably identify some FTEs that are going to be needed for this process. Cost is still nebulous and so forth. So we don't come before you today and say we have a final solution, but I think what we're looking for today is some guidance from the Secretary of State saying, hey, it looks like we're headed in the right direction and we need to really do some more research. One of the things I want to make sure everybody understands is that this would not just necessarily be a HART solution. It might be a solution for the needs of other vendors as well, other election vendors in Colorado, that they could use this process. And I also want to make sure that, you know, I'm a pretty simple guy, so I want to make sure that everybody understands what we're talking about here. We're talking about the vendor transmitting data to Colorado Interactive, the portal. The portal making a pristine copy of that information that would be stored within the portal in such a way that they can verify that they have no fingerprints on the data itself, and then the county would reach into the portal itself and draw out their data, whatever they were looking for, whether it's passwords or whatever. So that's kind of the process. In my own simple way of thinking about it, that's what it looks like.
And what HART transmits to the Portal Authority, that includes all of the programming for the election with templates. That's what we're talking about?
It could, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Am I speaking out of turn? And HART can certainly talk to that as well.
And I guess I would like to find out, I mean, to see if we need to have some discussion. I think you need some feedback, and so I'm thinking we need to have a little discussion about how whether that would be a potential solution to the deficiencies that the testing board identified. And so I'm just wondering if, John, if you have any questions or comments about that.
Thank you, Bill. I think I have more comments than questions at this point. There's certainly an overlap between the templates and the databases. And truthfully, I think we're less concerned with the database, more concerned with the templates, and more concerned with administrative control or administrative knowledge of the voting system after it's been deployed. And I'm specifically talking about things like passwords on devices. Without BOSS, the county doesn't have the ability, from my understanding of the system, and maybe Travis could address this, they don't have the ability to change administrator-level passwords. That's part of the programming that's going to be passed on to the county. So now the vendor would know what those passwords are at an administrative level from the county. The issue with the templates, I think, could be resolved in a couple of different manners. I mean, we've talked to Hart and Travis about submitting those to ITAs. There is a base set of templates that have already been created for Colorado. Those could be submitted to an ITA. They could be verified to the 2002 standards. We could then escrow those at the state and make those part of the trusted build and roll those out to the counties. I mean, we have some options that we're considering for the templates. And those are kind of the two endpoints. The database is in the middle, and I think there are forensic tools out there that we could use to take snapshots at different events in time that the county could even do themselves. They're relatively easy. It's very low cost. That you could just take these snapshots and pass those on to the state, and then we can verify the deltas between those to look for normal changes that you would expect to see in the database. That doesn't prevent a secured method of transferring the database, but that, I don't think that's really the root cause of the concern. It's more the validity of the trusted build, the prevention of administrative-level access to the vendors. Those things are really hard security requirements that we've built in the new Rule 45 that we really need to uphold. The trusted build is so important to the root level of security, and HART system is actually it's a great system, but it's very dynamic. When you install the trusted build, we have a static list of files with certain values, and when you install that onto the system, you generate all kinds of new files. It's very dynamic. It incorporates a lot of Microsoft features, which there's not a problem to that. It just makes the verification of that as you are working inside the databases and doing different things, it's hard to verify that in different points in time. And that's why I think we could use some forensic tools to take snapshots of the database and look for normal changes or abnormal changes to identify if there's a problem. Does that help?
I guess what I would say, John, is I'm trying to understand where we're at in this process. you indicate that there's maybe some resolutions for templates, may or may not be. Again, so much of that depends on what does the ballot look like and so forth. We've also talked to Hart, and we'll probably turn in some supplemental information about templates in terms of some other augmentation that might be done there. I think, again, when the service center is building the ballot, one of our visions is that because this is such a rapid process, that our vision is we're all really visioning outcome. I mean, that's what this whole process is about. What is the outcome of the election? So one of the reasons for the portal to actually take that data and store it is in the case that there's a challenge on the election itself, you know, we could go back to that original data and show that it was pristine and show that there was nothing in that data that had changed the outcome of the election. So that's kind of the direction we're headed in terms of that process. One of the reasons we felt that was a better approach is because the speed that's necessary between receiving the ballot and getting it into the county and actually using it really precludes too much in terms of Secretary of State involvement in that process. We know you're busy and active and so forth. And again, we're focusing on outcome to the process. The one area that we think that is problematic is the password business. Remember that the purpose of the password really is basically to open the voting polling place and to take the polling place down. So I suppose there could be some problems in terms of that, but we think it's less problematic. One of the things we think that is a huge benefit is that the vendor knows what the passwords are, because when our counties lose the password, they turn to the vendor and say, uh-oh, we lost the password. So I think that's been part of the theme that we've been talking about today, that we have to get to the point, I believe, that in some capacity, with some verification, we understand that the vendor must be a trusted partner in this relationship. So we have to identify, is there a reason why they wouldn't be? Would there be a reason for them to corrupt the ballot? Would there be a reason to use the passwords inefficiently or inaccurately? There's no proof that they've ever done that. And I think there's huge benefit from having them the ability to access that information. So I think there are some points that we need to get to. We're going to have the vendor up and talk here shortly, so maybe we want to hold some of those questions for that point. Are there any other questions that we want to talk to Colorado Interactive, the Statewide Internet Portal Authority?
I don't think so. John, do you have any questions about that? No. Okay. I guess not. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hillary Hall, Boulder County Clerk and Recorder, up again for those of who might be listening. Our next area that we'd like to cover is the requirement for additional audits. We do agree that the existing process, it does need refinement. The question is how do we get there in the current year that we're in with all of the other changes that we need to focus on? The other piece that we'd like to point out is that more doesn't necessarily mean better. Sometimes more just means more. And so what we want to look at when we get to our solutions is how to do the right amount of auditing in the circumstances that require it and no more. And usually just a blanket formula may not be the approach to do that. Because sometimes additional auditing really is just redundant and doesn't actually add to the statistical validity of the process. And that's what we all want, is to make sure that we create an audit process that is an actual audit and adds to the validity of the election, because that's the whole point of why we do what we do. It's all about the outcome and making sure that the results are true and valid. And so while it's important that we have the right software and all of those pieces in there, it's all about the result. And this is the critical step in making sure that the results are the results that they're supposed to be. So some of the proposed resolutions is, first we'd like to suggest that we put the audits in the SOS rules and not in conditions of use. if possible. Like, the reason for that is that I think we're going to get better and better at auditing as we go on and as we have actual practice. And it seems that a rule would be easier to address that issue than putting it in a condition of use. So we put that out there as a suggestion. We also want to let you know that both Douglas and Boulder County are very committed to developing a pilot audit program for this 2008 election. Both of us have larger staffs where we have the ability, even if something is a bit more burdensome, to be able to absorb that with all the other changes coming on. Because again, it's, you know, when you look at any one piece, you can come up with great solutions and think, that is absolutely what needs to happen. But then you got to take that piece and put it into the picture of everything else that's happening. And this year, there are so many changes, and some of them haven't even been resolved. I mean, in addition to the ones we know are coming, changing over our voter registration database is going to be very important. The other one is that, are we going to be voting all paper, or are we going to be able to use our current election processes? Those two alone are enough to get many of us up at 3:30 in the morning and not be able to go back to sleep. But then on top of that is to create an audit process that may or may not add to the statistical validity of the election. And then also to put that on top of counties that have very small staffs to adapt to change to begin with. And so what we'd really like to suggest is that, you know, Boulder and Douglas County, we work with experts in the field with statistical validity, the Secretary of State's office. We create a pilot program with an eye of also how do we roll this out in the smaller counties, and we would suggest then rolling it out for the smaller counties in 2009. And what we'd ask now, instead of putting an audit process in the condition of use, perhaps we could state that an additional audit process is needed and is under development, and give us time, because I know there's also national statisticians that are also looking at this very issue of what is needed and what's the right amount of auditing and no more to validate the election. And I have more information on that that I will send in my written notes and comments. So that's what we ask for on the audit process. And we do agree. I mean, we need to look at that. I mean, this is what it all... And I'm probably a little more passionate than some of my colleagues, I apologize, but they knew the risk when they let me take this topic, and they all agreed that I should be the one covering this, because I am. Because I think this is what holds it all together. I mean, this is the outcome, this is where you know, doesn't really matter what software you're running as long as how the people voted or how it was tabulated. And then it's especially important in a close race. And so that's what we all want. And I think that by bringing in the resources we have in our state, we can really come up with that process. So we ask you to put it in rule, to give us a little more time once we get through a few of our other issues, if we have anything else we're doing right now, and then to really be able to focus on that and what does that audit process look like. So,
Hillary, can I ask, mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to ask about Senate Bill 189, because that in its present form, I think, would require this year a review of the audit processes with a view towards changing them.
Right.
And I think I hear you saying maybe that's a little rushed.
Yeah, I guess my idea with 189 would be, again, to bring in some of the larger counties and have them be part of a pilot program that creates the processes with counties that have larger staffs to be able to implement this, even if it is, you know, our hope is the ideal audit is one that is actually fewer ballots with more validity and the right amount of effort to it. Is that what we're looking for? And so that's one of the hopeful things that I'm hoping we can work with the legislature on as well, is to get them to understand this also, is that we have so many changes going on, and that if we could get, you know, in the metro area, the larger counties on board, which is where 80% of the votes are, will that be enough to be able to have people have continued confidence in the election results? So we have a ways to go on that one too, but we are working on it. And then if we hand it over to the Secretary of State's office and work together, I really believe that we can get a solution that is feasible and doable.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to add to what Hillary just said, is that current rulemaking already allows for a county to come to the Secretary of State and say, we think we have a better audit process. And as I said, both Boulder and Douglas are committed to doing that for the 08 election, and we'll try to have that to you shortly. And in fact, one of the things I think we need to focus on this whole audit process, why is Douglas and Boulder maybe looking at a different solution? And the answer is, we treat the elections a little bit differently. Our process is a little bit different in Douglas, and I think that's one of the things that we need to keep in mind as we move forward with this audit process, that there are differences, slight, but some differences between different counties, the way they've approached this process. So we want to emphasize that maybe one size does not necessarily fit all. The focus needs to be the statistical reliability of the audit process itself. Okay, I want to talk about requirement for power backup systems. We understood that we think we're agreed right now that the East Lade and the JBC already have a backup system. The contingency was here that there were about 2 hours worth of backup with the East Lade JBC. The requirement is for 3 hours, as I understand it. What we'd like to say is we're not sure that the requirement is appropriate. We're not sure that 3 hours is the appropriate time, and so what we want to do is apply some real life, and you can just put them all up there, Dub. We want to apply some real life situation to the process. First of all, we know that with the hard equipment, if the power goes down, the data is not lost. It's maintained. So if it immediately goes down. Secondly, we know that currently for the East Lade and the JBC there is 2 hours of backup time or thereabouts, and a lot of that is varied depending on what kind of load is being put on the process itself. The solution is maybe UPSs, that we find them to be very, very expensive, and to have a UPS for every device is hugely expensive to the counties, and we think that this is not necessarily a good use of funds. But one of the things that we're kind of looking at, we have to look at this real life situation. So we're in a polling place and the power goes down. We assume that most of the polling places that we're dealing with, that means there'll be no light, that it will be dark in the polling place. We believe that we won't ask those voters to stay there for 3 hours if the light has gone out. We believe that there's probably some violation with fire marshals and sheriff's departments in terms of keeping people in a dark location. We have discovered that this does violate some problems with ADA. And of course, we can't ask anybody if they have disabilities, but if the power goes out in a building and the door opener device no longer works, we're in ADA violation at that moment in time. And so, as we get to the requirements for, or our resolutions, what we're asking for is let's put this into a real-life situation. Under any circumstances, do we want to keep people in that environment? The answer we think is no. And the other piece to this is that we are required by the Secretary of State to send contingency plans for what happens if this be the case. We're all required to have a solution if there is this kind of emergency. So it's already part of the Secretary of State's information from every county that's required by the Secretary. So we believe that it's appropriate maybe to relook at this requirement. Is 3 hours really appropriate when we know that there's no data loss, that under any circumstances in a dark situation, we certainly don't want our citizens to maintain there for any length of time. We want to get them out of there as quickly as we can for lots of safety rules. You know, whether it's in August primary and the power goes down, we assume that the air conditioning goes off. If it's a November general, we assume the heating goes off. And again, we don't want to keep people in those somewhat, what we think, perhaps dangerous situations. Okay, I think we're going to bring up Jessica and perhaps Hillary to talk about MVPs.
Jessica Levenger, Gilpin County. Hillary, who's my support. Just to help me out. Okay, we're going to talk about 6 MPBs per device. The SOS, Secretary of State, has identified the root cause as programming limitation, where it is actually a security feature. Once the database is finalized, the size of the election is defined, and at that point you are no longer able to introduce any additional data cards after the election has been defined. The current HART processes identifies election-specific MBB requirements for each individual county, and that currently works very well. As Jack has said previously, one size does not fit all. We have 47 counties ranging in population from 500 voters to over 200,000. That one size fits all doesn't really work. It creates security storage issues. Yuma County already has already stated that they have storage issues, and to make that secure is, again, that's another problem. And to be consistent, it's another unfunded mandate. Is that good? Sweet. So our resolution. When all use conditions have been finalized, the counties will work with HART to identify new MBB requirements and update a process that has worked successfully in the past. Questions?
What would that, tell me more specifically what that would look like, maybe. I mean, would it still go to the number of MBBs, or?
I would direct those kind of questions to Travis.
Okay.
And it does. I mean, there's a process where you work through, and a formula you work through in the HART training manuals that says how many MBBs do you need to run your elections, and Travis can speak to this more later. We love putting Travis last because we can put everything on him at the end.
Okay.
What they have found and what we have found is anyone who follows those procedures has had no issues with running out of MBBs, because that's what the issue is if you have defined your universe, you have your MBBs, which are the data storage cards, and you need more, you would be out of luck. I mean, there are processes that you can add to them, but if you follow the formulas and work with all the information that the vendor has learned over the years, you end up with the right number, and there has not been a case that we are aware of where anyone who has actually done that has had an issue with it. And so, again, it's to make sure that we scale our solution to the county that needs to be scaled to, because, again, I think Jessica made a great point. I mean, 540 voters versus 200,000 voters, your needs are going to be slightly or very different on that. Mm-hmm. Working on my sarcasm, sorry.
John?
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. The testing board has done additional research on this, and I think we're actually agreeable to going with the HART documentation for use of memory cards.
Sweet.
Save you some time.
So you had us at hello? You had us at hello? Or what was the phrase?
we'll go through this one together then. Yeah, I have you on this. No, I'm wishful thinking.
Okay.
But I'm happy to. We were a fine oiled machine, but now we're going into our contingency plan right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't have me on that one, sorry. But I'm happy to.
We're going to talk about trusted build.
Yeah.
One of the problems that we know, and I know John and so forth are working on this process, but currently we don't know what the process for the trusted build is for HART counties. Maybe it's still in development. I know it's probably unique based on other things that are going on. But again, you probably detected a theme with the HART counties, but we're concerned about what we're deeming unfunded mandates, and we hate to sound like a broken record, but we can't overemphasize the fact that so many counties are just limited in resources and so forth. So we threw this in without knowing what we were talking about, really, and we apologize for that.
And what the outcome was on it. We're looking for a little clarification. What's the outcome of
this? So maybe that's not part of it, but we want to keep talking about it as certainly a possibility. So obviously our resolution, again, without really not knowing what this trusted build is going to look like. Certainly where the chain of custody is not in question, we're not sure that the trusted build is necessary if we can verify that there's been a chain of custody. And we think that probably the trusted build is necessary wherever we have a software upgrade, and just as a side note, we don't know where the Secretary of State is on 6.2. We understand that there's something going on, but many of us would love to be able to utilize 6.2 in terms of this 08 election, whether that's going to be possible or not. And we would assume that there would need to be some kind of trusted build process if we were upgrading to that process. So we're in agreement with that. Hillary, did I?
No, I think one of the outcomes is a little more clarification. So.
Yeah, so maybe you're...
If you guys, and what else you might have found since this happened in December. So.
Okay. John?
Thank you. The trusted build process, it is true that we are still working on finalizing the procedures for that. I mean, we're probably in the 80-plus percent range of having that all finalized. We are working with Travis and his group to schedule some meetings, and, you know, he's requested to work with the stakeholders after we have an initial meeting, which I'm all in support of. Our vision of this is a cooperative effort between the state, the vendor, and the counties, that we're all going to have to work together. I mean, we have to respect your schedule and your business needs, you know, as well as trying to coordinate this among 64 different counties. We do have a bunch of counties that have completed their trusted build, and we are rolling forward with other systems as they become certified. So that's the good part. I think in our schedule, in our mind anyways, obviously this hasn't come to fruition yet, we're hoping to be able to get all the other systems out of the way to focus on the Hart counties all at one time. But, of course, we have to meet with Travis and kind of discuss the schedule. As far as implementing it on the machines, the Hart system doesn't have the ability to verify the trusted build for the components. So it does require, for the initial rollout, the installation of the trusted build. That's the bad news. The good news is it's not that hard, and it doesn't take that long, and you don't have to take the machines apart. Okay, so you won't.
We like that good news.
We're liking it better all the time, John.
You won't have to break any seals. You know, we would just have to document the process that we do to install the trusted build onto the devices. So, without taking machines apart and pulling chips out, that significantly reduces the amount of time. Probably the largest impact will be on your servers, laptops, workstations, whatever you have in the county, because those will have to be rebuilt. So, part of the procedures and prep that we do is to try to figure out how to get a backup of all your data or a backup of your system, you know, so that you have that comfort level. And we do acceptance testing or LNA testing when we're done, so that you're comfortable. When we're not just going to leave and abandon you with wondering if the system's going to work. We actually want to do whatever processes are necessary. But the servers certainly will have a pretty big impact.
Can I ask a question to that extent? One of the things that we're struggling with, John, and maybe you can clarify, we're not sure the relationship between user acceptance of our equipment and the trusted build. Which happens when? Do they happen together? How does that work?
That's a great question. If you purchase new equipment and that equipment arrives, how do you incorporate the trusted build onto that? You know, we've talked about three different ideas, I think, in relation to that. One would be, obviously, to just call the state and say, can you come down? We got new equipment. We want to make sure it has the trusted build. Another idea would be to work with Hart to find out if there's a way prior to shipping to the county that the trusted build could be installed. And then the third way would be to come up with a method that the county has a copy of the state trusted build. Now, there's some software licensing issues that we have, and you know, we kind of want a global solution rather than this is how we're going to deal with Hart. But certainly that's up in the air still. You know, I mean, those kind of things we're all still trying to work out, because this is a new process for us. But we're definitely going to work together on this.
And I have a question on that, because I know some of us have been waiting to order additional pieces that we need. So any chance we might know that before we order, or do we have a timeline on that?
Sure. My advice would be to order equipment.
And still waiting for a few more details to work out, but conditions of use in our DREs. But once that's resolved, yes.
And I say that because we could do one of two things. I mean, we could work with you to wait until you had the equipment to do everything at one time, or we could come and do the pieces that you have now and then come back a second time to do the equipment later. There's lots of counties that are kind of in that situation. And we do have some space on the back end for what we're calling do-overs, you know, for redos.
So then I guess the next area of concern then is where do we put this, what we decide to come out, or how do we write it in a flexible enough way that, because we don't have it's kind of like the audit, we don't have the process refined yet, so where do we put that gives us some flexibility, you know, after we meet to have that? I mean, how is that going to be reflected in the conditions of use other than, or I guess my recommendation would be, can we make it as flexible as possible in the conditions of use, and then maybe once we have the process more refined, we can decide, is that in rule or is that in conditions of use? with a trusted build. Am I making sense? It looks like I am over here, but I don't know.
I think I am a little confused, because I think the conditions now just say that the trusted build can't be verified, and with any security breach, an undocumented event, you would have to reinstate the trusted build.
Right, and I'm just asking that we keep it that flexible.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. So there wouldn't be more. Okay, perfect. I just wanted to make sure, you know, not assuming anything.
Okay.
Thanks. You guys are on good. The same page. Good.
Okay, before we actually go to the final conclusions, do we have any clerks, any hard clerks that would like to add anything to process so far? We're all good.
I have one thing.
Okay. Uh-oh, I knew it.
I know. Not to add on to this, though, but I you know, a lot of times Jack and I are the ones up here, and that we appreciate that. But we also, we've worked so hard with the rest of the clerks, and we really appreciate all of the input. And so that when you see us, that it is all of us, and we have so many people, because our group is so dispersed throughout the state, that call in on the phone and are part of our pre-meetings and are really active in this, too. And so we want to thank them and also make sure that you realize, even though we are the representative people that you see here, we have also worked with the other clerks across the state, and we really appreciate all their effort as well.
Absolutely. So I guess in conclusion, there have been some points that we want to end with. First of all, the whole idea about what is the relationship between the vendor and the clerk. And we think at some point, in some fashion, we have to get to the point where they become a trusted party. How we get there, we trust and verify. We're all over that. We think that that's appropriate. But I don't know that there's any process. Again, I go back to statewide voter registration database. There's no way that process could move forward unless Sabre was a trusted partner in the process. I think it's not that drastically different between clerks and their election vendors. The second item that we can't overemphasize is that any condition, anything that we come up with in terms of the process, we hope that you understand that finances will affect it. And so I hope that as you formulate your decisions in terms of that, you have a sharp eye to the limited resources of our counties throughout Colorado, not just the 47 hard counties, but counties across Colorado are struggling with finances. That's an important piece to it. And finally, we really appreciate the fact that we're starting to open up this process, that it's looking more like a partnership. We think that's an important process, that as you evaluate everything, we hope you understand that the clerks are talking from a real-life experience process. That's not to say anything about the testing panel. They were charged with a specific duty within a certain parameter, and we agree with the way that's handled, but I think we now need to overlie, you know, common sense, real-life experience to the process itself. With that, we will end our presentation.
And I guess, let me add, this may be the wrong time to ask this question, but I did want to bring this up. There had been some discussion about Gilpin County maybe doing a service bureau approach to help with the counties. Help the counties avoid purchasing the boss. Is that still something that is being discussed? And if it is, that may call for some rewording of the conditions, I think. But I just wondered if that's something you wanted to talk about.
We certainly don't want to take that off the table. And, in fact, we'll talk a little bit about that in terms of our written presentation. Jessica, do you want to talk to that?
It's just a natural reaction. It's like a Christmas tree. We are still interested in doing it. We've moved forward. We were in Austin a couple weeks ago looking at their service bureau. Because they have done it for so long, we don't feel that it's right to reinvent the wheel. So we wanted to apply what they're currently doing to what we are offering from our county. We do feel comfortable enough that we would take on as many counties as we needed to and beef up staff. Know that our county may be small, but we are blessed with having an enormous amount of money behind us, and my commissioners are really good about supporting other counties, so we don't have the funding problem that most of the counties do, and we're thankful for that, and we try to give back as much as we can. So we're ready whenever you guys are. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
again, we want to keep that on the table. We still think, though, that our focus is to somehow figure out how the vendor, who has been the trusted partner in the past, can get to that point in the future.
Okay. Travis, Harold, you want to go next?
Yes, sir. I'm here at your pleasure.
If there's anything you want to add, or things that have come up in the discussion that you want to address.
Well, let me start off, if I could, with just a few points. First of all, this is not my day. Got up this morning and the printer in the business center at the hotel doesn't work. I wore my suit. There's no cameras here. And now I find out I'm the entertainment for the morning. So, it's kind of going downhill from here. Would like to thank you all again for opening up this process, as has been said here before by others, in order for us to talk about these things and get them out to where this is, as Hillary has put it, and Jack both, getting to be more of a partnership and trying to resolve these issues. I think the clerks have done a great job on their presentation, and I think that it provides a great contribution for the Secretary's consideration in looking at these use conditions, and I'm sure that he will take that information for that value as well. The presentation that the clerks made gives you a good idea about the depth of the review that they've done. They've looked into each and every one of these use conditions. They've tried to figure out and understand what the real objective of the use condition is, and then they've tried to assess what the impact of implementing that use condition would be on the way they currently run their elections, and then they've also tried to come up with some alternatives where that impact was not an acceptable thing to have to do in their view. So we at heart obviously applaud the clerks for the work that they've done. We concur in principle with the things that they've espoused here with regarding their assessments of those impacts, as well as the recommendations that they've made. We also plan to provide some additional supporting information in the form of documentation, which we will deliver by the deadline on Monday. In that documentation, there are a couple of points that you will see that have been made here from time to time that I'd just like to kind of emphasize a little bit. And one of those points is the fact that this thing that Hillary was talking about, flexibility, is there needs to be some recognition that systems don't always do things the same way. They don't all operate alike. That does not mean that the way they get to an objective is any less valid than the way another system gets to that objective, as long as you get to that objective. And so we understand, obviously, the charter that the test board has. They've got some regulations and some rules, and where they've got a number in there that says 3 hours of power, it either does or it doesn't. We also understand the clerk's concern, not about whether or not that rule is in there or whether it meets it or not, but why do we have that rule in the first place? And they talked about that. So there needs to be some consideration given to that. Otherwise, what we do is we tend to get into a situation where we can easily start to look at these as one size does fit all. And if you go look at all the use procedures for all four or three of the systems that are out there on the internet, you find that there's a lot of duplication from one system to the other about what these use conditions are all about. So our point here is that we need to be careful about getting into that one size fits all, and to recognize that there are other ways, more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak. An example of this was discussed and pointed out by the clerks, and that would be in the audit requirements. Everybody here who has Ballot Now understands that Ballot Now does not tabulate any results, does not produce any reports of results, and does not, on a batch-by-batch basis, create a report that would tell you what the voting results were for that specific batch of paper. There's a reason for that. We built this system so that you could enter in the ballots, you could put them in there, you could scan them, you could arrive at the point of getting ready to step through that process of transferring results and sending those cast vote records over to the tally system to be tabulated at the appropriate point without jeopardizing, but being able to maintain the security of the results up until that point in time. And this goes for a number of states where they can start, as an example, putting their by-mail ballots in as soon as they start to come back in the mail. So they've got these results in the Ballot Now application for 2 or 3 weeks prior to the election, but there's nothing in there that they can get to that will give them any actual results other than looking at the ballots themselves, because it does not tabulate those results. That does not mean that there are not valuable ways to conduct audits with the Ballot Now system and to be able to prove what you need to prove in an audit. And I think that's one of the points that Hillary was stressing, is that there needs to be some consensus on what are we trying to prove with the audit. Now let's look at the system, see what its capabilities are, and see what's the best way to do that. And of course, we've been trying to work on that and work with the counties on that. And obviously, when we saw the Senator's bill and the provisions in there for looking at the audit possibilities and for including a representative from the elections professionals in the field using each one of the systems, that was very positive move in our view. Another one is this topic that we're going to talk about some more, I'm sure, about this business of the trusted build. Keep in mind that this version of the software was generated some time ago, actually, and it was certified under the 2002 voting system standards, and it was built on a previous version, which was also built on the 2002 voting system standards. And in those days, quote unquote, things changed pretty fast around here, but in those days, the ITA didn't really care a whole lot about third-party software. In fact, they refused, when you sent them something, to actually look at third-party software as part of the system and as part of the application. When they did a, quote, trusted build, and sometimes referred to as a witness build, they would come to our facility out here in Boulder. They would sit right there and watch us compile source code. They did not want to watch anything that had to do with third-party software, and they weren't interested in the use of third-party hardware either, or testing that. These things have all changed, obviously, in the last couple of years, and there's been a lot more emphasis on that. And now the EAC rules and the 2005 voluntary voting system guidelines take an entirely different perspective on this. The whole point is that this software, 6.0 and 6.2.1 as well, neither one of them have been through the 2005 certification process, and consequently the artifacts of that process are not available, and they to go back and have the ITA try to rebuild those artifacts and reproduce those is not a feasible thing to do. So our point is, again, that there are different ways to do things. You can verify the proprietary software on any application that you have on any of your computers out there in the counties. You can do that by going to the NSRL website, pulling down the hash codes, running a simple program recognized by the software industry that will allow you to compare the hash codes that you get off the NSRL website with those that you get off of the machine, which cover everything that's on the trusted build CD that goes onto your computer. Now, that's just the proprietary software. It does just exactly what John says it does. When you install it, it creates a bunch of other files, and there are a lot of other things in there on that tree that get generated, but as far as the actual proprietary software that governs the applications itself, you can test those against what's out there on the NSRL website. So it does it in a different way. Just as with your hardware, if your hardware comes back from, let's say you get an e-slate that comes back from HART that you sent off for some repairs or something, and you want to verify that it has the correct firmware on it, all you have to do is plug in Servo and start up Servo. There's functionality in Servo which allows you to do just as I described for the software, and that is compare the hash codes that are on that device with the hash codes that are in the NSRL reference library. So there are ways to do this. Again, they're different from other systems. It's a different approach. It is focused on just proprietary software. It's not focused on all the other variables that are involved with the application and how it runs. But that doesn't mean that it is any less valid in the sense of what kind of verifying you have on that computer or on that device, what you're expecting to have. You also saw that the clerks talked about a couple areas which are going to require some cooperative efforts between the state and the counties and HART as the vendor to get things done. And that's, in fact, going to be the only way we're going to get these things done is for us all to work together. And we're very enthusiastic about the approach here of doing things as a group and in a partnership with each other. We think that this is really important, and we also recognize that, as Jack has stated and has been stated here before, that the success of those efforts also has to include some level of trust between the players that are involved. As we stated at the last hearing, our mission is to provide the local election authorities with the supplies and the equipment and the capability to support the conduct of their elections so that they're open, accurate, secure, reliable, and accessible. And that's our business, that's our mission, and that's what we're here to do and what we're going to continue to do. That mission compels us to, at the same time, try to work with the vendors and try to work with the state and be a partner in this business so that we can help in the process of making sure that the capabilities that are resident and the functionality that's resident with the HART systems are used the most efficiently and most effectively to support the elections officials as well as the higher objectives of the state and so forth. And we welcome the opportunity to participate in that. I would like to again recognize the initiative and the timely action by the legislature and Secretary of State, as I mentioned earlier, about making sure we have an open forum for these kind of discussions so we can move these things forward. And also, I just have to and want to recognize the work of the county clerks and their organizations in supporting this whole thing. I really admire their professionalism and their perseverance and their staying power over a long period and coming up here and testifying and working with us all together. And our thanks goes out to them and out to the Secretary's office as well. Sure, that's all I have. I'd be happy to address any questions. I'm sure John's got some about the couple of items.
Seemed like there were some questions, but I don't know. Now, John, did you have anything that
I could add a few comments. Just to probably provide some reassurance, and maybe I could have said this earlier when Hillary was giving her presentation, for the audit procedures, we are not hung up on the numbers that are audited. What we're really trying to address is kind of three things. One, we want to make sure the audit goes back beyond the machine. So we go all the way back to the tally database, from the ballot to the machine, back to the reporting database. The second thing that we were trying to address is that the audit is not a rerun of ballots, that it's the initial count in the audit would be used. And then finally would be to somehow increase the audit numbers. I think everybody recognizes that 500 ballots is probably a little too low for a central count device. So somehow increasing that number, especially when the races get tighter. So I think there is some flexibility that you'll probably see in those numbers and how to address that. The other comment I'd like to make is about the trusted build. There's definitely a separation between the validity and the verifiability of the trusted build. And we certainly in no means meant to discredit the validity of the software. That's not the point of the trusted build. It's the verifiability of the trusted build and the software itself. And that process that you talked about, going back to the NSRL files, downloading those, comparing those against the files that you install, that's exactly what the testing board did. And I think our notes will show well over 6 weeks of effort back and forth between your office, SysTest, various other ITAs, including NIST and the NSRL, to explain the discrepancies and to try to identify the files that we were seeing to figure out if those were known anomalies or unknown anomalies. And we were never able to resolve those files. And that's kind of why we're in this situation where we can't verify the trusted build out in the field and we have to reinstall it. So I just wanted to clarify that.
And that's fine. And as John mentioned earlier, we have had some conversations about getting together to work through those and figure out how we can get this done.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks. Is there anybody else who wants to comment? I don't think I have anybody else signed up. And John, if you don't have any other questions or whatever, then I guess we'll close. I think, Jack, you'll provide some of the written materials in the PowerPoint, too?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I have any other questions. So I really do appreciate everybody coming. I know a lot of work goes into this, and there's so many other things that you're also working on anyway. It's just amazing what you're able to pull together and be as well organized as you are with PowerPoints and everything else. So I really do appreciate that. So we'll just adjourn, I guess. For the record, the time is 9:31. Thanks.